fucking was awesome.
So he gave a kind of a convocation speech at Utah State one year. And my buddy, who was the university student council rep over the convocation speakers, had to go pick him up in the airport or something. And he says to me, "Will you ride with me?" I was like, "Oh, yes." Need to ask. Absolutely, yes. So we drove Tommy Lasorda from Salt Lake to Logan.
All right, we'd like to get started. I'd like to welcome everyone to the regular session of our City Council meeting for May 30th, 2023. I'm Mayor Brian Horrocks. Our first item, well, let me just say we are missing two members of our council, Elisa Van Langeveld and Ted Knowlton. Thank you. Don't get old. Ted Knowlton, who are out of town. And we have a third council member, Lisa Baskin, who is online. Our first item is, we'll turn time over to Council Member Gordon for our pledge and thought or prayer.
One of the best things about being on the council has been getting to know the youth council. So I would like to invite Shane and Landon up to come and help with the prayer and the pledge.
Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day, and we pray that we'll be able to have a good council meeting tonight, and that we'll be able to get things done, and that we'll be able to get home safely tonight, and that we'll be able to have a good rest tonight. And we say these things in the name of Christ. Amen.
Everybody would stand, please. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to our awesome youth council. Next item is citizen comment. This is where we allow anyone to address the council that has a concern or a thought for us. So if you're here to do that, please come forward and state your name and address. No? No D? Okay. All right, next item. So, it's been a while since we've sworn in our officers, pre-COVID, I guess. And so I'm going to attempt to do this as a group item so it doesn't take all night. So I'll turn it over first to Craig to introduce these officers. Thank you, Craig.
Thank you, Mayor. It has been about 2020, I think even 2019, since we have had the opportunity to do this. I think we all missed gathering a little bit during the COVID time, and we have been graciously allowed to take over the council meeting once or twice as a police department for some other recognitions in the last couple of years. But we have a number of officers, about a third of the department, that has not had the opportunity to be sworn in by our mayor. And that's an important part of any officer's career, is to have that formal swearing in, that oath of office, that means so much to them personally and to us as a community, but there's also a very good legal justification for the swearing in. So I would like to invite these officers to come up to be sworn in by you, Mayor, and then I'll introduce them when they're here. And then, depending on how time goes and at your discretion, let them just introduce who they have brought with them tonight. But Cody Hansen, Seth Schaefer, Luis Rubio, Austin Lewis, Hillary Mills, Ruben Correa, Alexander Jeffers, Randon Carter, and Kristen Banks, they are the officers we'll be swearing in tonight. If they would join me up here. While the mayor is coming down, I could tell you things about each one of these officers and the unique skills and talents and life experiences that they bring. Some of them, like Cody, have been with us for just over 3 years. Others are still in the field training program and just recently graduated from the field training or from the police academy. But each one of them bring experiences or life skills or very unique perspectives on public safety to the city of North Salt Lake, and I am very proud to work with them, and I appreciate each one of them. Maybe after you're done, I'll just mention a couple things about them, Mayor. But
I, repeat your name.
I, Carson Mercer.
Having been appointed by the office to the office of police officer, do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend the Constitution of the United States.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, the Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And the Constitution of the State of Utah.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Thank you, Mayor. We appreciate you doing that. Each of these officers have invited someone to come and pin their badges on. Officers, if you would feel comfortable just turning around and shaking the hands of Councilmember Gordon and Councilmember Porter. And you can wave at Councilmember Baskin. I know she would like to be here. And Lisa, we miss having you here also, as well as Ted and Alisa. We're sorry you couldn't be here for this. And then we'll invite you to bring up the person who's going to pin on your badge. Do you want to wait for the badges on, or do you want to?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So after your badges are pinned on, we're going to invite the mayor and other council members to be up here with a photo. So while they're doing that, let me just tell you a little bit about each of them. And it's just a Cliff Notes, very short biography of how long they've been here. Cody has been here the longest. He came to us in February of 2020. Came to us from FedEx. This was his first law enforcement job, if I'm not mistaken, wasn't it, Cody? So he has been a fantastic officer. One thing about Cody is he just has this innate ability to dig and dig and dig and find those that we're looking for. In fact, today he came to me and said, talked about a case that he had yesterday where other agencies around the South Davis area were looking for an individual. He was aware of it, and he ran across them and was able to arrest a man for 13 felony counts that not even were warrants yet. So that's amazing. Seth Schaefer came to us from Orem PD. He's also a now retired sergeant from the Marine Corps. Are you retired? Is that what they would call you, retired or just kicked out or quit? Whatever it is, he's not. We know that we don't have to lose him every 3 months now to training, but Seth has also been with us just over 2 years now, and he's been promoted to the rank of corporal since he's been here. He's a tremendous officer. He's very experienced. He's just a wise leader. Luis Rubio came to us from West Valley, and we lucked out with Luis. He has been a hard-working. He's a member of the Layton Metro SWAT team. He and one other officer, Kyle Ball, from our department, participate in that SWAT team. And again, he's brought a lot of experience and time and wisdom to this department and just a wonderful work ethic. We appreciate that. Austin Lewis came to us also in 2021. Austin, if you can still hear me, did a internship with us when he was in high school. And we became familiar with him then. And he told us back then, he said, I want to come and work here. And we've heard that before. We've had interns before. But he made friends with the right people while he was here, Jana and Jocelyn and Raylene especially. And he had a great cheerleading squad. So we're grateful to have Austin as a now a fully sworn member of this department, not just, although he has been filing a lot of papers lately, he's not feeling super well right now, but we look forward to getting him back on the road, and he's a wonderful officer. Hillary Mills just started with us last August. Hillary used to work years ago at Syracuse Police Department and took some time off and recognized that she wanted to get back into law enforcement, and basically started from scratch again, which I really admire. Anyone who can go through the police academy twice in your life is amazing. But the police academy does not let you keep your certification if you go out of the profession for more than, I think it's 4 years, which she was out for longer than that. But came back and just brings a tremendous amount of experience and understanding and really commitment to wanting to be a police officer. I think when you leave the profession and then you choose to come back, it's because you really know that that's what you want to do. And it's like that with Ruben Correa. Ruben also came to us with experience from the Utah Highway Patrol. Ruben was a decorated, well-recognized officer with the Utah Highway Patrol. Stepped away from the profession for a little while just to decide, is this really what I want to do? And realized, no, I want to be a police officer. Sorry, Natalie, that was the wrong thing to say. Her son's going to the Highway Patrol. So I joke about that. They are police officers. We love them, but you know, not everything's a felony red light, I've decided. So anyway, but Ruben has joined us again, and it's got just an amazing story. And someday I hope that you can hear that. It's really something. Alexandria Jeffers came to us from Davis County Sheriff's Office, where she worked in corrections and was on a great fast track at the Davis County Sheriff's Office to be part of their corrections and their, you know, like a lot of the corrections departments in the state, are involved with the JRI, the treatment, the monitoring, helping people get out. But she chose that to step away from that advancement in her career there and become a police officer at North Salt Lake. Very grateful for that decision, and she's done very well for us so far. She also just recently graduated from the police academy. Randon Carter came to us from West Jordan Police Department with some experience there. I know Randon's dad from a prior life I had now 13 years ago, which really is a prior life at this point. And he comes from a family that strongly supports public safety and law enforcement in general. He's technologically one of the smartest guys I've met. He and Austin are kind of going to be running our virtual training a little bit more, but we've really appreciated his good attitude, his experience, and his desire to be here. And finally, Kristen Banks came to us just last November. We weren't sure if we even had an opening, but she was referred to us by a bountiful police officer who is your brother-in-law, if I'm not mistaken, which I thought was a great honor to have a police officer from one of our neighboring cities refer his sister to us. That was very awesome to me. And she has also been through the police academy before and left with her husband to go, I hope I get this right, but back to Maryland in the military. Is that right? He's in Maryland still. He is a chief warrant officer. In fact, I shouldn't probably say too much because it's probably classified, but he flies some pretty important people around the world, and we've had the chance to meet him, and I think he's hoping to retire from the military soon and come out and join his family, and she also has family here. But Kristen also just refinished the police academy and has graduated, and we're excited to have each one of these fine officers join the already great officers that we have here and be part of our team. So if you guys will invite those to come up and pin on your badges, we'll grab a picture. And then, I don't know, Ken, should we have them introduce their families, or do you want to do that? So I'll give each of you guys just a moment to invite who came with you tonight. But come on up if you're going to pin a badge. Right. Oh, behind me? Please do so. No, they can go ahead and do it. We'll take a picture. Yeah.
One at a time or one at a time?
Oh, no, they can go out.
Okay.
Like, I'm the worst student. Where's Ruben's wife?
Looks like your first.
Would you please help me schedule this? She's an event coordinator. I should have her doing this.
Are you ready?
Can we invite Stan and Natalie also? So if each of you would just take just a brief minute and introduce to the council and to the public who is here who you have with you tonight, and then when you're done, your oath of office certificate is right here. If you would sign both copies and give one copy to Wendy, and then you keep the other copy. But I'll start with you, Hillary, if you want to just introduce who's here with you tonight. I think it's important that not only do our citizens and our council members see you, but they see the support system that's behind each of you, and that's so important, and that means a lot to us. So anyway.
Brought my wife, Trina Chacon. She's also a sergeant for UPD. So.
Thank you, Chief, and Deputy Chiefs. Here today is my beautiful wife, Elise, my father in the very back there, Gustavo, my mom, Dora, brother, Kevin, sister, Karen, and father-in-law, Roy, and mother-in-law, Trudy. Thanks for being here today. I brought my sister, Chanel Carter, my mom, Jody Carter, and my dad, Bill Carter.
His wife is under the weather. That's why she's not here. She would love to be here with him. At least that's what he told me. I'm here with my mother, third row just over here, my wife and my two children, and my brother. I haven't been in the career very long, but I've had some up and downs already, but they've always been there for me, supporting me and wanting to pursue this career. So thank you.
Here today, I have my sister-in-law Brandy, my brother-in-law Lane, who pinned me, my youngest Bodie, my son-in-law Ryan, and my daughter Malia.
So today, I invited my deputy chief. He's known me since I was delinquent in high school, so thank you so much. And thank you, Chief, for having me out here. Love being here. So.
So I'm here with my wife, Candace. So without her, I wouldn't be here. She really pushed me really hard to do the police academy, so I appreciate her for everything.
I brought my amazing fiance and our little one, Victoria. I brought my parents as well, who have been with me my whole life. but they've gone through it with me and my brother. We were both law enforcement, so I really appreciate their support.
Can I just quickly say, when I was originally elected, police and citizen relations were kind of rough for a while in other places in the country, and I have been continually amazed at the quality of our part of our police office and the quality of the training you receive and the good work that you do every day and how well you represent our community. So thank you for wanting to be here, and thank you for being here and doing such a great job.
Thank you.
Can I say something? Please, since Natalie said something? I've certainly appreciated our police and department. It's grown a lot since I was first elected back in 1991. And so Mitch and I used to ride together quite a bit, so that kind of tells you how long I've been around. But it's good to see a good group of people, and I appreciate it. My son-in-law is an officer as well. He's with Davis County Sheriff, and now he's with the state of Utah. But appreciate you all. Thank you so much.
I'll just say that the support from the family here is awesome, and that's so important. And I, too, have a brother that's a police officer, retired now, but just a great strength in our community to have this awesome police force. And thank you to Chief Black, who I disrespectfully called Craig on the way up. So, but anyway, thank you so much. Next item. Oh, go ahead, Lise.
Congratulations to all of you, and thank you so much for your service. What a great job you do.
You don't have to run off, if, you know, this, it just gets exciting from here. But. Okay, next item is a public hearing and consideration of resolution 2023-25R, a resolution adopting an amendment to adjust the 2022-2023 fiscal budget. Heidi?
Thank you, Mayor. This is somewhat of an emergency budget hearing. We typically wouldn't hold another amendment until the end of the fiscal year for the current fiscal year. But our HVAC system continues to struggle with repairs and maintenance. And just a few days after our last budget hearing where we increased the budget for repairs, we had a major glycol leak. And so this budget request is to increase the amount in professional services for our government buildings by $40,000. This gets us at a total budget of $120,000. I can tell you year to date right now, we've spent $110,000 just with the additional expenses related to that glycol leak. This will leave us with $10,000 to get us through the end of the fiscal year, which will cover our other professional services, janitorial, elevator repairs and things like that, and any other HVAC minor improvements that need to be made. Were there any questions?
The missing tile? Well, yes. That's on the action item list.
We're working on a tile replacement.
Yeah,
for some of these tiles.
Is there any questions on this? Okay, I'll open a public hearing. Is there anyone here to address this matter with the council? Seeing none, I will close the public hearing and entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion, Mayor. I move that the City Council approve resolution 2023-25R, resolution adopting an amendment to the adjust the fiscal year 2022-2023 general fund budget.
I will second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Councilmember Baskin. I read lips and she said aye.
I do have the microphone turned on if she wanted to speak.
Natalie?
Aye.
Aye.
Stan? Thank you. That passes just barely. Next item is consideration of resolution 2023-24R, a resolution adopting an amendment to the city's youth city council charter. And we'll turn this over to Peyton Otis.
Hi, I'm the current Youth City Council mayor this year. So in our charter that was approved in 2016, it stated that the mayor of the Youth City Council has to be a senior in high school. I, however, am a junior because we were unaware of this rule when we did our last, like, nominations for our elective council. This year I've had a wonderful experience as mayor, and one of the things that I think has helped with that is that I've been in YCC since 8th grade, which is 3 years, so quite a long time where I've been able to experience a lot. I will be a senior next year. We found that as a junior I had slightly less on my plate than a lot of our other senior EC members did with college and everything like that, which made it so I was able to give more time, devote more time to being the mayor. On top of this, mayors who are juniors are able to serve in another capacity the next year and are able to help mentor and, like, yeah, give advice to the current mayor with any experience that they've gained. We talked this over with our council and had our own, like, vote, and it passed, so we just wanted to bring it to you guys.
Any questions?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your motion.
Are you ready for a motion?
I am.
I move that the City Council approve resolution 2023-24R, a resolution approving the amendment to the City's Youth City Council Charter, allowing the youth mayoral candidates to be in the 11th or 12th grade during their term of service.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion on this? Let's start with Natalie.
Aye.
Aye.
Lisa? Aye. Thank you. That passes. Peyton, question? So I assume you're the mayor next year?
No. Mayors can still only serve one term. So.
Oh, okay. The other question I had for you is I've never heard any from you were looking for a recommendation for.
For the Naval Academy. I just have to finish this, like, fitness assessment thing, and then I will get that.
Okay.
To you.
All right. Chris Stewart is resigning. I didn't know if you heard that. I think his wife has some health issues, and he's going to actually resign early. So I don't know if you need to hurry and
get that in soon instead.
Okay.
Awesome. Thank you.
Well, thank you for your service. She's been an awesome mayor. If I had power at all, I'd make her the mayor again. But
I would make her the mayor every year, forever.
Thank you. Okay, next item is consideration of a 2023 scholarship award for the Youth City Council Executive Committee. And we'll turn this over to Audrey Bybee. And speaking of awesome, the Bybees have been really awesome in their role here with our Youth City Council. I'm appreciative of that.
Thank you. Good evening. We appreciate you letting me take some of your time during your meeting to discuss scholarships for the North Salt Lake Youth City Council. My husband Enos and I have absolutely loved being advisors to the Youth City Council, and we are passionate about youth-led programs and training our youth as the new up-and-coming contributing members of our community. As we've attended training meetings for Youth City Council advisors, it has become quickly apparent that our Youth City Council is among the best in the state. I'm a little biased, but we require a lot from our members. Where most youth city councils meet once or twice a month, performing 3 to 4 service projects during the course of a year, our youth city council meets weekly and participates in a monthly service project, handing out food from the Bountiful Food Pantry to those in need in our community, as well as 4 larger service projects during the year when we have a fifth Tuesday on a given month. Other weeks of the month are spent on planning, government education, leadership opportunities, guest speakers, educational field trips, and team building activities. In addition, the Youth City Council sends volunteers to help support community events, as well as running our favorite community event, the annual Easter Egg Dash. Our program runs under the direction of an executive committee made up of a mayor, a city manager, recorder, and four committee chairpersons. Each of these positions comes with responsibilities which require time beyond the time spent as a member of the Youth City Council. Executive committee members attend monthly planning meetings, as well as leading their own committees to plan and execute North Salt Lake's Youth City Council program in the areas of leadership, service, publicity, and activities. These are not positions in name only. They are truly run by the youth who hold the positions on the executive committee. In 2004, or going back to 2014, North Salt Lake has offered scholarships to the Youth City Council mayor for around $1,000, and on many years to the Youth City Council city manager for $500. Scholarships for the other executive committee members have not been offered. Last year's Youth City Council mayor did not need the scholarship money for college and declined in favor of using the money for community service projects. We are proposing that a new scholarship structure be put in place as follows. The mayor would be awarded $800, the city manager would be awarded $400, and the recorder and the four committee chairpersons would be awarded $200 each. These funds would be deposited into a My529 plan for each executive committee member, totaling $2,200. As a side note, our service committee chair for the 2022-23 year abandoned his post, so we would not be disbursing funds for that position this year. Besides rewarding our executive committee for the extra time and efforts they put into running the Youth City Council program, they also offer an incentive for the executive committee members to remain invested in the YCC program after our leadership conference in March and as the school year becomes busier as it winds down. Further, it incentivizes members of the Youth City Council to apply for executive committee positions in upcoming years, which ensures that we have high caliber members running the program going forward. We are not asking for additional funds to the Youth City Council program, but instead asking that we be allowed to use existing Youth City Council budget towards these scholarships. We believe that careful budgeting is the skill that we should instill in our Youth City Council members as they use city funds to run their program. With careful budgeting, we believe the North Salt Lake Youth City Council can be run effectively in addition to offering scholarships as we build the future of our community through these fantastic youth. And if there are any questions, I would be happy to tell you all about my passion for the Youth City Council.
Thank you. Any questions for Audrey?
You ready for a motion? You want me to make this one?
Motion. Thank you, Audrey.
Yes.
Thank you, Enos. Thank you. I move that the City Council approve the proposed 2023 scholarship awards using the remaining funds in the 2022-2023 fiscal year budget.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion?
Can I just quickly add that last year, it was before Audrey and Enos came on, that we made the decision to not do the scholarship. And I really, really think this is a better way to do it. And if we do have an opportunity in the future where a member says, you know, I don't really need that. I've already got a scholarship, or my dad teaches somewhere. Then they can just donate it back for service projects. But let's keep this going as the consistent way to move forward.
All right. Let's do this by roll call. We'll start with Stan.
Aye.
Natalie.
Aye.
Lisa.
Aye.
Thank you. That passes. Thank you, Audrey.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Next item is consideration of Ordinance 2023-07, amending Title 5, Chapter 4, and Title 10 related to animal control. Sherry? You're not going to give us time to sleep on this one, huh, Sherry?
Got to strike while the iron's hot. All right, so this went to the Planning Commission last week. As you may or may not be aware, the Planning Commission only is responsible to give recommendations on the land use ordinances. So they reviewed the changes in Title V just as to give them context of what they were going for, but the changes that they actually recommended to you are the changes in Title X. So the definitions of kennel, the change of that, taking out the dangerous animals such as cats and dogs language. But in essence, they have made a favorable recommendation after having a public hearing last week. As you know, I went over the idea with this ordinance is that the county is going to take over countywide animal control regulations, and they've asked all of the cities to adopt the same ordinance so that it will be easier to enforce across the county. And so I have provided you with a draft ordinance of 2023-07 that amends Title V and Title X. Essentially, Title V will be replaced in its entirety. What I've left in there was basically it refers to the Davis County Animal Control Ops ordinance being adopted. It specifies that our land use regulations regarding animals are still in effect in Title X, and I provided an additional method of enforcement. If the county, for some way, were not enforcing our land use animal control regulations, it's very explicit that we still have the option to use our own code enforcement to enforce those ordinances. And then the changes in Title X, like I said, just relate to the definition of animal kennel and making that explicit that that's for a commercial endeavor, changing the, taking that sentence out of household pets. In fact, I didn't have the part struck out for such as lions and tigers, and the Planning Commission specifically asked that we strike that out of the definition. And then, under the use regulations for household pets, subject it with this caveat, so that shows that they're permitted in all of the residential zones, but that it's subject to the Davis County Animal Control Ordinance, including the number of household pets. The Planning Commission wanted that last statement, including the number of household pets, added to that, because they felt like it needed to be explicit so that somebody wasn't looking in this code for the number of pets they could have. They would know they needed to go look at the Davis County ordinance. And then adding animal kennel commercial in the various industrial and commercial zones as a conditional use in CS and CG, and a permitted use in MD and not permitted in the MG zone. As you know, we do already have some animal kennels and boarding facilities in those zones, which we've licensed under other categories of veterinary care or pet care, but this specifically then would allow it as a conditional or a permitted use in those zones. So that is the recommendation from the Planning Commission and staff.
Thank you. Any questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
I have a dog who is fabulous, and when we travel, we board him through an internet service called Rover, and they just match us with someone in the area that wants to take care of our dog for the weekend. Sometimes he's the only dog there. Sometimes he's the dog there with their own family pets. But once he was a dog there with like six other dogs that were being boarded over Thanksgiving. Do we talk about that, like temporary boarding, anywhere in our, because people just do it out of their house.
So we don't talk about that specifically, but if they have more than four dogs that they're caring for, they should have a kennel license from the county.
Okay.
So a kennel / boarding license. So.
Okay, that's good to know. Thank you for clarifying that.
You're welcome.
I'll make a motion so my colored dog is not illegal anymore. I move that the City Council approve Ordinance 2023-07, amending Title V, Chapter 4, and Title X in the relations to animal control regulations with the following findings. The proposed amendment is in accord with the Comprehensive General Plan, Goals and Policy of the City. Changed or changing conditions make the proposed amendment reasonable, necessary to carry out the purpose stated in this title.
Thank you.
I'll second that motion.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Let's start with Lisa.
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. Next item is consideration of approval of proposed City of North Salt Lake Federal Awards Policy. Heidi.
Thank you. So, as we have received new federal awards over the last couple of years, the requirement to have a federal awards policy specific to our organization has become necessary. You will note that we had an audit finding that carried forward from 2021 because we did not have a federal awards policy. Funding that we've received in the last few years have been both not only just the CARES and the ARPA funds, but CDBG grants. And then we received $1.1 million to do the Main Street reconstruction project, and we're continually pursuing federal funds, which makes this incredibly important that we are defining to those outside agencies how we are going to meet the uniform guidance, the two CFR 200, which is a gigantic set of codes by the federal government on how we're going to manage those funds. And so this federal awards policy attempts to incorporate all of those requirements and also explain how we're going to carry out and meet those regulations. So specifically, some of the minimum standards are that we will have a sophisticated enough financial program that we can identify, probably through some project accounting methods, where those funds are going, how they're being allocated when we do receive them, and that we're able to track both the ins and the outs, as well as any matching, and as well as financial policies that support that. There's also very specific tracking on capital assets. So if we use federal funds to purchase a piece of equipment, there's rules on how we have to capitalize that, how we have to dispose of it. There's allowable costs and non-allowable costs. Most of the section on our federal awards policy is directly out of that 2 CFR 200 on what those things are. Pretty obvious things like alcohol and things that would probably fall under our code as being non-allowable also are picked up in there. Sets the procurement thresholds. So the federal awards policy is very specific on what methods you use to procure and what vendors you can use. They can't be suspended or disbarred. There's a way that we have to go in and track that for any vendor that we use or that pay with federal funds, as well as long-term monitoring requirements for those to make sure that the vendors that we're paying are also conscious of the different federal requirements that come to them through a way of participating in the program, the project. So I'm not sure if you had a chance to read the policy, but would take any questions that you might have on it.
I tried to read through the whole thing, but I think I got lost about page 50 or something. But
how unusual for the federal government to make something complex. And
well, I just want to give us all a pat on the back for hiring people who can do this so well that if we don't understand it, we still know it's good.
Well, the bottom line is we have to play ball with them. It's,
are you ready for a motion?
Yeah.
I got it.
For the North Salt Lake Federal Awards Policy.
Thank you, Lisa.
Oh, she got that. Good work, Lisa. I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All in favor, we're starting with Natalie.
Aye.
Stan. Aye.
Lisa.
Aye.
Thank you. That passes. Heidi, while you're up there, let's talk about amending the city's personnel policy and procedures manual.
All right, so we currently have in our employee handbook a section titled Continuing Education, where there is some language related to tuition reimbursement, but some sections are a little vague or there just isn't much clarification on how that program would run. And the way it's written doesn't make it a tax-exempt program for employees that choose to participate. So the policy that has been recommended today picks up some of those more specific items that make it a qualified tuition reimbursement plan and make it more equitable to establish as a benefit for all employees. So if you take a look at our current policy, funding level on how much an employee can receive and a cap on that is silent. And so the proposed policy sets that at $2,000 per year, up to $6,000 per employee. As far as budget appropriation, the current policy doesn't discuss whether or not it requires any formal authorization by city council. It's just allowable. And this way, it would be an individual line item in the budget and subject to annual appropriation as we're reviewing our personnel expenditures and benefits structure for the year. The current application process is somewhat set at the discretion of the mayor, city manager, or city manager's designee, but there's no formal application process that describes really what the program is going to be about, what the intent is, anything like that, no formal request process. So this policy would require a formal application that would carry forward all of that information that we would need to determine eligibility. And it would be eligible until the funds that were allocated for the year run out. So starting July 1, applications could be received until the funding runs out, and then the process would start over, assuming it was funded again the next fiscal year. Repayment terms were the language was a little strange in the current code. It's if separation within 1 year of graduation, the employee would have to reimburse the city. New policy references in any funding that has been given from the city or reimbursement within 24 months of separation would need to be repaid, and that could be through a payroll deduction. Grade requirements are going to be the same, 2.0 or above, pass in a pass-fail system, or a C. Again, this makes it a qualified plan instead of a non-qualified plan, which means the employee can take this as a reimbursement, and it will be on their W-2, but they won't have to take it as part of their taxable income. And then the other, the current policy references other education expenses as authorized, as necessary, and approved by the city manager. And I've adjusted that language just to make it very clear that it's for tuition only. And then last, the program type, and that is that the current language is for required certifications and trainings that happen throughout the course of our positions, conferences and things that we're required to attend, or continuing education credits. That's really handled under our travel policy reimbursement for those types of things and expenditures. So this is very specific that this is voluntary continuing education on the employee's own time, not on the city's time, that's gone through this approval and reimbursement process with the proper grades. Often in those certifications, you don't get a grade. So it's just very specific to that type of program. So were there any questions about this policy?
No, it looks very well done. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
I guess I just have a question about the application process. I assume that, Ken, as you would review this, it would have to have some level of benefit to the city or something related to their job specifically?
That's a great question. And it's one that we've talked about as a staff quite a bit. I have in the past taken the position that it is always in the best interests of the city for our employees to receive college education beyond high school, whether it was related or not related to their position. So that was my first position. Obviously, if someone is taking college courses or seeking a degree in a field that is related to their position or their job, that's really a great benefit to the city. But just so you know, I think where we've landed is college degrees are better than not having college degrees. And so so that's really kind of how we looked at it. I think it makes better employees who are taught strategic thinking and have a more well-rounded educational background, they're always better employees. That is, their capabilities increase. The way I said it first makes it sound like we have bad employees and good employees, and that's not necessarily the case. But I do think this is overall in the city's best interest. I think the amounts are not super large, and so I think you can feel good that this is not
can't be abused
a program that's going to be abused. there is a high level of interest in this program. We've had several employees come through and have in fact received college degrees, which again, as I said, is a great benefit, I think, to them personally and to the city. Yeah. So I think this is a good program. We were all uncomfortable with the way that the current policy is written. It's just too discretionary. And so I think having an application will allow us to, as an executive staff, to be able to evaluate if someone should receive assistance from the city or reimbursement, as it's stated. This is also designed, the $2,000 a year and $6,000 per employee, that's a kind of a lifetime. Those amounts are purposefully not going to be 100% of someone's tuition. And so it's not our intention to pay for 100% of people's obligations to get their college degrees. But I think the assistance is really helpful. And in particular, I would also say the employees we've helped in the past have been employees that really need the financial assistance in order to go to college while they're still working.
I had, years ago, I worked, managed an office building for an insurance company, and they had a very liberal education reimbursement policy, and a guy, you know, you can basically hire yourself if you want to sell life insurance, and he did. And then he enrolled in the Disney animation program. It was very expensive, and the company paid for it, and as soon as he graduated, he quit and became a Disney animator. And I thought, okay, that's not what they had in mind, I don't think.
But a question I have is, you say college degree, does it only apply to colleges? I mean, in my world, Microsoft and places like that offer courses and stuff that people take and learn a lot about how to do software and computer. And a lot of those are more advanced, in my opinion, than what the colleges offer. So would that include those type of courses as well?
I think we'd have to look at that. But
I think that's how it is written. That was the intent, was that it would be for any continuing education, so long as it was supported by a position that the city has in its personnel register. So if it's a position that we currently employ, it would give the opportunity for those who don't currently have those credentials or skills to have a way to get that education, whether it's through a degree, but it doesn't require graduation for the reimbursement or anything like that.
Okay. That's true.
It just has to be an accredited college. This would, and that's what makes the application process so streamlined, is that it's pretty much you're either eligible or you're not. Your program is eligible or it's not. The coursework is eligible or it's not.
Sure.
So it should be very, very easy to determine who qualifies.
Disney animator might be pushing it
a little bit.
So, but still.
Is 1 year of a cooling off period long enough? In other words,
they have to
pay the money back if they hire out after having completed this course within 1 year.
So we've put it at 24 months. So if they terminate employment, any reimbursement that they have received in the last 24-month look-back period would need to be repaid.
I'm sorry, I misread that. I saw 1 year. Okay, great. Thank you.
And then they do have to be employed with the city for a year before they're eligible to apply. That was also important, that we are not distributing funds to folks who are still in their probationary period with the city.
Wendy, did you have something? Okay.
We're catching Lisa's votes.
All right.
Speech.
Any other discussion? Motion?
I'll make a motion, Mayor. I move that the City Council adopt the proposed amendments to Section 17 Benefits of the City's Personnel Policy and Procedure Manual to include tuition reimbursement program language as attached here, tuition reimbursement program policy.
Thank you.
Second.
Oh, too late, Natalie. We have a motion and a second. Let's start with Councilmember Baskin.
Aye.
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 Thank you. Thank you, Heidi. That passes. Next item is consideration of amendment to the city's personnel policy and procedure manual related to sick leave donations. And we'll have to turn this over to Ken.
Yes, thank you, Mayor. This is an amendment also to our manual, and I'm grateful that we're sort of getting to some of these amendments that have been needed for a long time. Some of you may remember that a previous city council discussed this topic about donating sick leave back in 2019, and so we didn't ever use that after we had a discussion about where the council felt comfortable with donations. We never really used those. The issue has come up again. And so I'll take a moment to explain kind of the situation where this would apply, because it's really very narrow. This amendment is proposed to cover a specific circumstance that is not an injury or an illness related to workers' compensation. So we're not talking about on-the-job illnesses or injuries. We're talking about illness or injury that occurs outside of the workplace or is due to an issue outside of the workplace. What happens if an employee has an illness that is becomes a long-term illness for that employee, before they can receive long-term disability benefits, which the city pays for and covers, there's a 90-day waiting period. And that's the period of time we're talking about where sick leave hours could possibly be donated to the employee. So this would apply in cases where an employee who is ill and isn't able to work for more than 14 days in a row and has exhausted all of their leave time, so they don't have any sick leave, vacation, comp time, holiday leave, or any other types of leave, they would be eligible to receive donated hours by other employees to cover that a portion of that 90-day period. This policy proposes that employees could receive, in a 12-month period, 400 hours of donated sick leave. That's 80 hours short of approximately of the 90-day period. And I felt that employees need to have a little bit of exposure as an encouragement to save their sick leave and save their vacation leave. But in reality, this applies to employees such as the 9 police officers that we swore in tonight, who may not have been here long enough to have 90 days of leave and may need a donation. So we have a program that's created and proposed here where we would have a way to have employees donate up to 40 hours of sick leave in a 12-month period of time, and that would basically run from November to November. The reason we do it that way is because that's the same look-back period that we use for the sick leave buyout. You might remember that we purchased some sick leave hours from employees if they choose to do that as a way to encourage them to save their sick leave every year. But an employee can donate up to 40 hours to a pooled bank, if you will. And then for employees who find themselves in this position of having a long-term illness, they can submit a request to us to have hours donated to them. It's important that in this case that we also craft a program where the donor is tax exempt. That is, it doesn't appear as though they're using sick leave as income. And so we do have some IRS rules to protect the donors. These have to be qualified medical emergencies. We're defining for the city's program a qualifying medical emergency as an illness or injury that, as I said, lasts for more than 14 consecutive days and it would apply to the employee and the immediate family. An immediate family for this purpose is defined as a spouse of an employee, a dependent child of the employee, or another family member related to the employee who must reside in the employee's home and for which they have primary support responsibility. So that doesn't happen too often, we don't believe. So those are kind of the general terms of how and when an employee could receive donated sick time. The sick leave hours that are donated, there are some rules on that. An employee who wishes to donate has to have at least 80 hours of their own sick leave after the donation. They can't receive any remuneration or gift in exchange for the donation, no consideration from anyone. The donations will be anonymous, and then there's a formal application to a form that we would ask them to fill out and that we would have to approve before the donation is accepted. So that's the program. We've had questions about whether or not employees could say, well, I want to donate to this person but not this person. That's really not how it works. It's all going to go into a pool, and employees who qualify to receive those donations will be able to get those. And so for the employees who might consider donating sick leave, they need to think of this in terms of just donating sick leave hours to anyone who might need those hours. This is an addition to our Section 19-4 of the manual, which is entitled Sick Leave, and it's simply an extra section which you have in your packet. So if there are any questions, that's the purpose of this policy, though.
Ken, what are the budget implications? So if someone leaves, how much of their sick leave do we buy when they leave? And like, is this gonna be, I hate saying this because I want people to be able to be home, but is it gonna be a drain on city resources? Is it gonna be an increased expense?
So that's a great question. And I think the answer is, yes, if we don't implement a policy like this, then employees who find themselves in this situation will not be paid for their 90-day period of time. I would point out that the city previously provided short-term disability insurance, which we never used in the 5 or 6 years that I've been the city manager. And so I made the decision that we need to stop paying that insurance premium in favor of something like this. So I think the answer is a little complicated by the fact that the city is saving several thousand dollars a year, $5,000 or $6,000 a year, by not having short-term disability insurance premiums. And then offset by the possibility that we would need to pay an employee for their time off through donated hours of sick leave.
But I think, if an employee doesn't donate hours, I just work here and I get a ton of sick leave hours. How many do you buy back when I retire?
That's a great question. So there's a table in the personnel manual that has a graduated scale. So if you work 30 years, for example, you can get up to 50% of your sick leave paid for. And it's less for fewer years. So
it would also be a drain, because if we're paying 50% at the end or 100% for somebody else now, it would be an increased cost as well.
It could be. But let's say that I donate 20 hours a year to this fund. Those are hours that I no longer have, so that when it comes time for me to retire, if I retire from here, I have less hours that the city will pay.
But the city would pay them at a higher rate earlier.
Well, what about possibly a lower rate?
So, like if Ken's donating it to like someone who does not make as half as much as Ken does.
Doesn't make an outrageous amount of money.
Okay. We can use someone else besides me. I'll say it this way. I believe that the most capable employees, that is, those who have saved their sick leave and might be tenured, that is, they may make a higher hourly wage, will be the likely donors. And so those hours would be paid out at less cost, because there's just it's a straight hour per hour donation.
Okay, can they also donate like vacation time or comp time for sick leave?
No.
Okay, and if they cannot donate so that they have less than 80, can they donate where they have less than 80 sick if they have comp and vacation? Or is it just less than eight?
No, it's only related to sick leave.
It's only sick leave. Okay, yep. This sounds great. This is really thoughtful. Yeah. I hate that we have to do it. I wish that everyone just had what they needed. But it's really good.
Yeah, thank you. It's very uncommon. It's very uncommon to have someone in that 90-day period and have no leave hours. And so, like I said, since I've been the city manager, we've never had an employee go into that period of time without some hours. You might recall in 2019, well, some of you that were on the council, we were talking about one of our employees who had been here a long, long time, and she became ill, and other employees had a desire to donate their sick leave to this employee. As it turns out, she'd been here so long that she had hundreds of hours of sick leave, and was able to get through a portion of that 90 days, and in fact never went on long-term disability, but she had enough sick leave to get her through her illness. So that's the ideal case. But I think what we will find is that from time to time, we will have a newer employee, or perhaps an employee who has had an illness that they've taken time off for intermittently, maybe a few days here and there, but it has become worse and now needs to take a long period of time off. So that's, again, it's a rare case. I think this is a good use of the benefit, though, and I think it's a well-meaning program.
So I can remember when that event happened and I'd heard about employees wanting to donate, and I was just so touched by that.
Yeah.
And I thought, she has to feel loved, and that has to help her recovery at some level. And
I'm sure it did.
It was just such a great, great thing. What a great city. Dang.
I agree. You want me to make a motion?
Sure.
I move that the City Council approve the proposed amendment to Section 19-4 of the City Personnel Policy and Procedure Manual related to sick
leave donations.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Natalie?
Aye.
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 Thank you. That passes. And thank you, Ken. Next is the presentation of the annual fraud risk assessment. Heidi? I've done this on some of the boards, and we got a pretty good score.
It's kind of a fun process. So we are required to go through this annual self-assessment just to be sure that we are being mindful of potential risks of fraud with our financial responsibilities, the way assignments are made, the internal controls that we have. So we go through this annual process. We give ourselves an assessment. We're required to give that, obviously present it to the legislative body, to the state auditor's office. Our external auditor ensures that we've completed this step. And then the trust has now began asking for a copy of our fraud risk assessment as part of their risk management responsibilities. And so we did score the same as we did last year, 365 out of 395, which is in the best category of very low risk. The things that we could do to improve our score and get that extra 30 points is creating an IT and security policy, creating a cash receipting and deposits policy, and formalizing our internal audit function. And I can tell you with the work that we're doing in the finance area, the work that we're doing in the 2024 budget of removing the treasury responsibility from the city manager and putting that in a city, another city employee, it is all moving towards those cash receipting and deposits, getting those things together, getting that policy together, as well as really getting the separation of duties that we need to get that the internal audit function. So while we do have an internal audit committee, we've not really formalized that. So that is the hope that we can get those points next year. This is the look of what those scores look like, the different areas that we have to accomplish to get that 365 score. And then the highlighted areas are obviously the ones that we will still be working towards in this next fiscal year. But I'm still very hopeful that even though we are still a small organization, that we'll be able to do a formal internal audit function. It's difficult. I can't audit myself or necessarily my staff that I oversee, so it does require work on behalf of the legislative body and getting that internal audit committee together to do some review or some requests for information. And a big part of this score is the 200 points. And that's where we go through a checklist of areas that are known for fraud. For example, if you're the person maybe taking cash at the counter, having two people count the till at the end of the night, things like that. Having some mitigating factors if you do have a small staff. And we do have processes in place so that we can get the full score on that area, even though we've got just the right amount to keep everybody kind of in their own lane and so that everybody's got checks and balances on who's kind of reviewing their work. So I don't think there's any action that needs to be taken, but just a presentation of how we fared this year.
I have a question and always a little bit of concern about the IT and computer security. And is it safe to say we outsource our security? And because I've talked to them and they feel very comfortable that we're good to go, but seems like to me just if we backed up every night, that covers a lot of issues.
We do. We've also, I don't know, Heidi, if you have an answer to that question.
I have a little bit of an answer. Yeah. So we've just gone through an extensive IT questionnaire through the trust to get our insurance renewed. They're obviously very concerned about data breaches and security issues. I want to say it was something like 80 questions. They wanted to know every IP address. They've reviewed it. I'm guessing we can probably get that IT and security policy in place and just formalize how often do we do phishing things. So really what it is are we taking steps to mitigate that? I know we are doing that and we're using our IT service provider. I just don't know on what regular rotation and schedule. And obviously all that happens behind the scenes and not staff doesn't necessarily know all of the ways that they're trying to protect us.
So thank you, Heidi. That's excellent. And we are covered by the Utah Local Governments Trust. I got that confirmation from them just last week that we have that coverage. We do have off-site backup every day. So I believe our data will be protected. We also have purchased a couple of products at our IT provider's suggestion and recommendation. We've purchased a couple of additional safety products to protect us from fraud. We've gone through some phishing email training, which is one thing that involved all the employees. What was interesting is during that training, it wasn't done very well, but it turned out to be an even greater test because of that for phishing emails. And so actually, even though it was sort of like a train wreck, I think the outcome was really good because everybody started talking about phishing emails and there were lots of conversations going on. And we had a great training. It's probably coming up on a year now that we did the phishing emails, and so we continue to talk about that, particularly when one of our staff gets an email about purchasing gift cards for the mayor, which we get with some regularity.
The mayor I'm still waiting for my gift cards. So
exactly. Yeah. And other unusual requests, and our employees really flag those. And so I think we're making good progress on the IT. There are so many people or entities out there trying to hack into computer systems. It's frightening. But I do believe we've got as many controls as we can have right now. And I do have confidence that our data will be protected if we had something catastrophic like a breach. So.
Okay. Thank you, Heidi. Next item is approval of City Council minutes for May 16th. You know, I asked a dumb question and it made the minutes. And so I thought, should I have that? No, well, I did say it, so we'll let it go.
But if it's not the intent of your dumb question, you can change it.
It was accurately portrayed.
No Solomon-like wisdom there.
Well, do I have a motion?
I will make a motion that we approve the minutes from May 16th, 2023.
I'll second that motion.
All in favor, say aye.
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 Thanks, Lisa. Action items? I guess I could report that I reached out to Bountiful and Woods Cross mayors. And they thought it was a great idea to meet. And I said, okay, well then tell your city managers to get my city manager. So.
Okay, I'll follow up. Thank you for doing that. I think the way to do that is to put something on the calendar and invite them.
Yeah.
That includes a dinner or something.
Yeah.
We'll just do that.
Maybe at the new clubhouse.
Yeah, maybe at the clubhouse. I think that's a great idea.
Okay. Any other updates on action items? Let's go to council reports. Lisa?
The microphone's on, but I'm not sure if she heard you. Oh.
You don't have anything? Okay, thank you. Natalie?
I just have two quick things. One is the Natalie Gordon splash pad opened this past week. And two, if I'm remembered for anything after I'm no longer sitting up here, I want it to be that I found Audrey and Enos Beebe, and also the splash pad.
I'll second that. It was Natalie's idea to have that splash pad.
And Ron voted against it.
Did he?
He said, there's no way we're paying that much for a bathroom. And I'm like, think about it.
I'm glad you guys got through that.
We did. It was tough.
I know. I could tell.
Okay. Let's. When Stan gets back, we'll go to him. City attorney report? Anything?
Nothing tonight, Mayor.
Okay. Thank you. I don't have a lot, but I have a couple of things here. Let me see. Stan, do you have anything for the council reports?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Spring cleanup happened. I drove down there. I was told that I'd get a cookie, but I didn't get a cookie. But other than that, they did a great job. Yeah,
you had to get out and go into the office there.
Okay. Anyway, appreciate, David, all your work there. And I did make an observation. I don't drive on 400 West that often, and I hope it's on our schedule.
It is on our schedule.
Okay. Yesterday, I attended the Memorial Day service at the Bountiful Park, which really is kind of the South Davis Park, and it was just a great program, and we just take a lot for granted, and I appreciate that the efforts they put in and the people that ran that great event. They had the Utah Voices there singing, and one of them is our own Mike Taylor, and he said to me, are you going to do anything about the people tearing my backyard apart? And I didn't know anything about it, but apparently his next-door neighbor's fence has collapsed and his is coming down because they're undermining behind his house. Do you know anything about this?
I haven't heard anything about it.
Anybody?
Do you know where Mike... Are you talking to Mike Taylor? Yeah, you'll have to use the microphone. Yeah. Karen knows where all the undermining is going on.
I'm guessing. I haven't spoke with Mike directly, but I assume that he lives on Parkway Drive.
I think so. Mike Taylor, he's the one that flies the helicopter in on our auto show.
So there is some current undermining going on that has affected the backyard of some residents, and that would be associated with the retaining wall reconstruction in the ridge.
Okay.
So if he lives directly above there as part of the necessary work to remove and then restore that large of a retaining wall, there has been some soil and some material, obviously, that has been removed. And along the back property line of those homes. So there is, if he lives at that location,
That sounds correct. He'd mentioned a retaining wall.
Well, he should have been spoken to by the contractor. That's
yeah.
If his fence is shifting or his backyard's damaged,
yeah,
the contractor doing the repair should have been talking to everybody about that.
So the developer for whom the contractor's working was verbally agreed to speak with all of the residents that were going to be affected. Found out after the fact that there had been a lack of some of that contact happening between the contract and the developer and people who thought somebody else was doing it in a group meeting. So we believe that's been corrected.
But we'll track it down.
But I'll follow up on that.
Thank you. I've also received complaints from the Google installation now on Eagle Ridge. And I've been very vocal with Google in my day job. And my guess is that they respond, but maybe just slowly. I mean, the comment I got today was, can we just have them stop until we figure out? So I know there's someone in the city that's working directly with them.
So,
oh, I thought it was one of your underlings. It's you directly?
What's going on? Like, are they breaking sprinklers?
It's a combination. So Josh Taylor, who is the public works inspector, does a ton of work with them in the field. And then we oversee jointly with public works those permits. I often follow up when people are unresponsive to folks in my department or public works. So I do end up getting involved in the end. So Google Fiber has installed everything that they're done with the installs everywhere they can. There's sections on the outside of Eaglewood Loop. They didn't get their crossings in before we paved, and we're holding on that street moratorium. So they're going to have to wait for some sections. They're doing extensive work throughout the town. Right now, they did a bunch of work right before winter hit, and they didn't get the landscape repaired. And the public works guys have, they do thorough follow-ups and making sure they get out to do some of those restorations. In addition, Google crews are actively working to remove and replace the top mastic sealant that they put in those trenches. It was either improperly placed or poorly placed or bad material. But it's been pulling out all over. So we're having them come back and restore all of those trench top fills. So they're working everywhere, but they're no longer installing new line.
Okay. So are there areas of the city then that won't be available?
There's just the area on the south, again, the road's curve, I don't know what direction. We did where we did the mill and overlay in that upper section. They didn't get across Eaglewood, even though they had known, and we reminded them multiple times that they needed to get that trench crossing in. They put crossings in on Eaglewood Loop, Eaglewood Drive, a bunch of other, they missed Eagle Ridge Drive. And then they came back and said, well, we want a cut, and we told them no. So in order to bore, they would have to do a pothole for every existing utility. We've invited them to find other ways into that area, but because of kind of the lengths of the side runs, and as that moratorium is expiring, they had not yet done the whole city, if that makes sense. So when this original decision was made, it was prior to us adopting a means by which they could potentially get an exception to our moratorium with the special surface crossings that we'll now allow, where they then have to do a mill and overlay in a larger section. So there is now a means by which they could go across.
Okay.
They have only finished laying line within the last 2 weeks. So up till now, they've been actively laying new main.
Mayor, is it a service issue, or is it people having damage in their front yards?
I think it's damage. And, you know, they obviously hire out subcontractors.
Yeah.
And my personal experience is they did a really bad job, and they were really trying to make it right. But I finally just said, thanks, you know. They brought me a new mailbox. but they didn't really fix the problems, you know, that kind of thing.
So is the problem when someone like subscribes to Google Fiber and they're running the line from the fiber to their house?
No, it's just they're just running the fiber up the street,
but it's like on park strips and stuff.
You know, because I have that rock wall, they had to go at one point under the sidewalk. So they took out the sidewalk and installed a box, and then it snowed 2 feet, and I had large chunks of sidewalk in my park strip all winter.
Your snow blower.
And my mailbox went from 5 feet tall to 3 feet tall and was bent in half, you know, kind of thing. And just that kind of, you know, I finally pulled all the flags out on Saturday that they'd stuck in my yard and threw them away. And it just kind of didn't. And I had gravel in the area, or rocks in the area of the mailbox, and they're gone, kind of a thing. Just.
Well, I've seen several social media posts too where they take broken sprinkler lines and things like that. People are complaining.
Yeah. Then they came to my house and said, "We're going to be in the area in the next day, and we'd like to run the fiber to your home, even though you haven't signed up. And then someday, if you want to sign up, then it's there." And I said, "Sure, great." So they ran. And they disconnected Xfinity, and it took 2 days to get that back on. And you know, my son works from home on the internet, and so it's just that kind of, they're just struggling. And so I go to these BOMA events, and Google's there, and they know that I'm mad at them, so they like, "We're sorry." And anyway.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Well, the people that have signed up for it and it's working for them in the city, they seem to be extremely happy.
We actually have it.
We have it too, and we are thrilled with it.
Yeah. I haven't got it yet. They did run all the lines.
I just saw that Bountiful is doing Utopia.
Yeah.
Which I was just like confused about.
Yeah, I didn't get it either, but. The other item I mentioned this earlier, but we're going to lose our congressman.
I just saw that. I didn't know it until you said it.
Officially announced yet?
No.
Rumored announced.
Well, it was on social media earlier today, and then I heard it on the radio driving here.
It's in the Trevana Desert.
And I guess his wife's got some health problems, and so he's retiring. Anyway, he's a good one. We'll miss him.
Yeah.
I just want to say that I would have been part of replacing Congressman Stewart, but I'm no longer a Republican. So I had to resign my precinct chairmanship and my delegate status. Yeah.
Okay. That's all I have. Ken?
Great, thanks. I also was going to mention, and I'm sorry John isn't here, but I'll say it for David, but the spring cleanup, it's really... It's just a monumental effort by public works staff, and every spring and every fall, it's all hands on deck. And I know how busy they are this time of year, I think they got some rest in the winter, but not much because of all the storms. But the public works department is busy and. They do an awful lot. So I really thank them for that spring cleanup. And our residents, we get more compliments from the spring cleanup than almost anything. Although fireworks gets a lot of compliments too. But that I hear from residents on the spring cleanup over and over, just what you said, Mayor, that you drive in and they're just all over getting your stuff getting the garbage removed and everything. It's a great event for the residents. And then I was going to just announce that many of us are going, several of us are going up to Logan next week to a Utah water growing water smart program that's sponsored by the state of Utah. There are a few communities who take part in that, and that have been allowed to take part of it in it. We will be sending. I'll be going. Mayor Horrocks is going. Linda is going in her capacity as the communications manager. David Franson, John Rueckert are two operations managers, Carmen Wilson and Randy Simmons, and John Lovato will be going. And so it's really a workshop designed to help us as a city come up with a strategy, a set of strategies for water conservation, using the resource better. We have, in our application to the program, we indicated that one of our main objectives is to educate the public and to really get aggressive about this public outreach that we think is needed. And it's not that we're not doing a good job of that, because I think our residents are amazing in how they conserve water when we ask them to, but just to put a formal program together, and I think it will be worth our time. It builds on the water master plans that we've been doing, and so anyway, I just wanted to mention that on June 6th, 7th, and 8th, we will be in Logan, and the state is covering our costs except for a couple of meals. So, and that's all I had, Mayor.
All right. There's no need for a closed session, so I'll have a motion to adjourn.
I will make a motion to adjourn.
Thank you. We are adjourned. Thank you, everyone.